This is Word of Mouth from New Hampshire Public Radio. I'm Virginia Prescott. Back in March, we spoke with Vermont novelist David Blistein about his latest book, David's Inferno. The book is part memoir, part brain research, and part rough guide to Dante's Divine Comedy. It is also surprisingly funny. David will read from the book this evening at Gibson's Bookstore in Concord. Here he is talking about the razor-thin line between creativity and mania. I asked him if ricocheting between those two extremes worked for him during his former career as a New York City ad agency executive.
It did work for me, and as a writer, and because I had the ad agency, a little mania, light mania they call hypomania, and it comes in pretty handy when you have to juggle a lot of things at once and when you have to come up with a lot of new ideas. And for years, that was okay. I was used to the down periods and the up periods, and I did what everyone does. I drank coffee. I smoked cigarettes in the old days. I'd do some exercise, I'd take some B vitamins, and I managed things, and it was okay. It's, to me, the way life was.
Until it wasn't okay anymore. You crashed.
Until I didn't know who was going to show up at the next meeting or who was going to be around to write the next headline. That's tough.
When you started taking antidepressants, however, and that worked for a long time.
That worked. I mean, you know, it always takes a few months for them to start working, but after 3 or 4 months, it stabilized. And for 4 or 5 years, they were quite fine. They kept me, you know, they don't make you euphoric, but you can take the punches.
Mm. And then what?
Then I started to go off them because my life had gotten so much less stressful. I'd sold the business. I thought, well, this is a good time to get off them. And then a few months later, I started plunging again. So I slowly started going on. That's when people have to know you go on very slow and go off very slow. But through some combination of effects, I got knocked off kilter and was off kilter almost continuously for 2 years.
And you were really in hell. That's the way you write about
That's a pretty word for it, yeah. In fact, sometimes I think I'm exaggerating and people say, well, Dave, you're not exaggerating. If anything, you're not.
Because they saw you.
They saw me.
Right. Now, you write that the hardest thing about writing this book was not really knowing what you've got. Now, what do you mean by that?
You know, people can't have a hard time talking about depression. And part of the reason is that it's very intimate. It's very personal. But we don't really have a language for it. And there are 300 diagnoses in the Diagnostic and Statistical Manual, DSM. 300 diagnoses, because they're still trying to put their finger on the fact that this is a very, very individual disease. Mm.
Something that was very illuminating for me, you wrote a comparison of depression and sadness in the book. Could you read that bit for us?
Yeah, I'll read that. Because it's something that people always ask about, am I sad or am I depressed? Big-time depression is way more than extreme sadness. Every psychiatrist, textbook, and pharmaceutical company may draw the line in a slightly different place, but for us case studies, there's no question when you've crossed it. To use a biking analogy, sadness is like finding yourself at the bottom of a steep hill that you know well. You may be discouraged when you realize you have to climb this hill again, but you just had your bike tuned up, the road's in good condition, you know which gears to use, and you're confident you will eventually reach the top. Depression, however, is like finding yourself at the bottom of a real steep hill you've never climbed before. Turns out it's not even paved. You have your road bike instead of your mountain bike. The shifting's screwed up so you can't get into the lowest gears. The tires are worn smooth and you don't have any replacement tubes or a pump. Oh yeah, I forgot. A bunch of drunk kids drove up the road the night before and threw empty beer bottles out the window, shattering glass all over the place. You have serious doubts you'll ever get to the top. Mm. Every road biker knows that one.
Well, you know, and what I imagine there is like the anticipated fear. You just can't imagine climbing this hill with all these obstacles.
Sometimes I've realized that the opposite of depression is not happiness. It's inspiration, desperation, inspiration. To climb that hill, you need to be inspired. To go out in the world each day, you need a little bit of inspiration. I'm looking for, doesn't matter what it's for, first cup of coffee, a meeting, seeing someone. When you're really depressed, you're not looking forward to anything.
I was just thinking, too, you know, of course, the allusion to Dante's Divine Comedy throughout this book. Despair is the one unforgivable sin, isn't it?
Well, he has a lot of issues with a lot of people. As I say, it's funny that the most opinionated person in the history of creation gets to go to paradise and none of the rest of people do. But he puts in limbo people who never have the chance to reach paradise because they were never baptized. Now, you can take the theological piece however you want, but the fact is he describes their situation as sorrow without torment. In other words, they know they're never going to get there. And that's the worst torment of all. And that's how you feel when you're really, really depressed.
We're speaking with David Blistein. He's the author of David's Inferno. It's a new book about his own midlife journey through the dark wood of life when the path was quite lost. Allusion, of course, to Dante's masterpiece, The Divine Comedy, which gave Western culture a vision of hell and of purgatory and of paradise. Why did it speak to you? Why did it reach across the centuries and find you?
At first, I started blogging about this, and I decided to call it David's Inferno. And frankly, I thought it was a little precious, but people encouraged me to do it, so I did. So once I got a book contract, I decided that, well, I better give Dante his due. And this is the story that everyone goes through. There are a million depressed stories in the big city, and mine is just one of them. Everyone has their own experience. So I'll relate it to this more mythic character. And then once I got into the book, I realized it's way more than just hell, purgatory, and paradise. And you don't end up in paradise. We have our lives. The Divine Comedy is our lives. It's the whole thing. It's not a straight path. It's not that simplistic.
Well, there's still this idea, I think, that we have that you have to go deep into the bowels of hell, right? You know, that we have to dive into the wreck, this idea that we have to smell the burning hairs, you know. Now we know so much more about the human brain and how elastic it is and how much is going on biochemically. We don't have to sink so far. Do you think that's still a myth that we have, that you have to sink in order to know what your deep thoughts are, the dark side?
I don't know how dramatic it is in the sense, because as I say, we all have some experience with it. But if you look at your life, people say, well, I want to live as long as possible, as healthy as possible. And then you look back at your life and say, what has really changed me? What has really transformed me? And I'm not saying you have to go through a major depressive episode. I don't really recommend it. But everyone's had their major failures, their major sadnesses, deaths in their lives. So that is part of the human condition, and we forget that. We think that that has to be cured. It can't be cured. I don't think it should be cured.
Mm. People historically, of course, have struggled with depression and struggled to name the causes of it. You also live in contemporary southern Vermont, where
yes,
people said it was your kundalini energy or blocked blood or whatever. What else? What were some of the supposed causes and treatments of your depression?
Well, what I liked about it, and one of the things I want to bring to the table, is that everyone's right, okay? People who are depressed don't have the luxury of fixed opinions. We don't have the luxury of saying, oh, you shouldn't take prescription meds. We don't have the luxury of saying, oh, homeopathy is just, you know, craziness. It can't possibly be true. We don't even have the luxury of ignoring an astrologer who says, oh, it should be over around now, you know, a certain month, especially where it turns out it was. So, yeah, I live in southern Vermont. I'm open to everything. It doesn't matter to me. And the good thing is that acupuncturists and psychiatrists trust each other in southern Vermont and hopefully other places.
Well, you do at one point say, I invoked Jesus, Buddha, Isaiah, Dale Carnegie.
Right.
Hedging all your bets.
Right. I'll take any help I can get.
Try them all. Well, I have seen over and over again and in depressed people, that one side of the dark woods, you know, they breathe this great sigh of relief, but always feel the shadow sort of, you know, pulling this plow behind them in some kind of way. What does it mean to live with depression, David?
It's called the black hair, the black dog, some people call it. And it really is like having another person travel along with you. And, you know, you sort of get used to them being there on some level. And when you're really stressed out, they take over and make life miserable. So it really is, I say at one point, you know, one of the things, especially my generation, started this, I guess, in this culture, the idea of living in the moment. Well, one, the best way to live in the moment is to have a major depressive episode because the moment won't leave you alone.
Mm. I wonder also, you know, you wrote this book. Mm-hmm. It started with a blog, as you mentioned. Yeah. It was picked up by the Commons newspaper,
yes,
out of Brattleboro. So a lot of people got exposure to this. I wonder if people, I don't know, did your conversations change when you started talking openly about being depressed?
When you say the word, suddenly everyone outs themselves to you. I was at a meeting in New York yesterday, and I was sort of on the outside. I wasn't really part of it. A lot of people didn't know who I was. And at the end, we were having coffee, and people said, well, what do you write? I said, well, I have a book about to come out about depression. And immediately, they were right there. Immediately, we were close friends, talking about their families, talking about themselves. You know, my joke is the next thing you do is, hey, what drugs are you taking? What most people would say was, what team would you root for? You say, okay, what are you taking? It's, you know, it touches us all.
That was my earlier conversation with David Blistein. He is a novelist, essayist, blogger, and former ad agency executive who now lives in Vermont. David's book is called David's Inferno, and he'll be reading from it tonight at Gibson's Bookstore in Concord. You'll find a link to his website with all the details at wordofmouthradio.org.